All right, so John chapter 5, let's set the context for our study this evening. If I can get someone to read verses, actually 1 through 18, we'll read the entire context. Jenny, you just beat out Randy by half a second there. You don't want to go to an auction with her.
After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Get up, take up your bed, and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." But he answered them, "The man who healed me, that man said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk?'" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, as there was a crowd in the place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. And this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." This was why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God.
All right, so just let's cover just a little bit of what Jonathan did last week. First of all, the healing of this man on the Sabbath day. Again, he talked about the fact that Jesus was in Jerusalem for the feast. It was near the sheep gate. There was a pool called Pool of Bethesda, around which were five porticos or porches. Why was it called the sheep gate? It's likely the entrance when it was time for the sacrifices, that's the gate in which the sheep would be brought in for the sacrifices, in all likelihood. And what took place at this pool? And again, Jonathan appreciated, he had a better map than I did. I'm like, I'm using that one.
My angel stirred the water.
Okay. So, but well, first of all, who hung out at this pool? Okay, so it'd be, and it was just one or two? What does the scripture say in terms of the number? New American Standard uses the word a multitude, yeah. I mean, so there were a lot of again, sick, blind, lame, withered. And so again, this man was one of those. And as, Bruce pointed out, it stated that an angel would stir the waters of the pool and that the first one to enter would be healed. Now, Jonathan, you mentioned, I heard on the tape, that it wasn't in your PowerPoint, but you showed an actual picture.
I was wanting to.
You was wanting to? Was it something like this one? Okay, there's a lot of them. So this is a picture of the side of the pool, which... my understanding was that the pool was actually right here, that this is a wall, that there was an upper pool on this side of the wall over there, but that this would have been the pool, the lower pool, where this would have taken place. And indeed, the interesting thing is, then just a note, because up until a certain point in time, they didn't know where this pool was. As you can see, they excavated it, and originally doubted, archaeologists discovered it in 1956, this pool exactly as the scriptures described it. They found this pool, they found the upper pool, they found the five porches. There were four porches around each side of the pool. There were four around the upper pool, and there was one, this part in between them, there was a porch up there. So there was actually a total of nine, but there were five then for each pool. exactly as the scriptures described. Again, one of those things in terms of confirming the authenticity of the scriptures is exactly what the scriptures provided. And so, one other, this is kind of an artist rendering, as it were, of, and you can kind of see from that former picture, this almost, you know, kind of fits where they would have the stairs that lead down into that pool. And again, the artist rendering kind of has the waters being stirred up at that point in time. So, as Jonathan pointed out last week, this man had been, again, I forgot to make that correction of the word. He'd been ill. He'd been sick for how long? 38 years. As Jonathan pointed out, Jesus knew how long he had been ill or sick or lame. Jonathan pointed out last week that, again, you had the instance of John chapter 9 in which the man was born blind. He was of age. We don't know how old he was, but he'd been blind a long time. He pointed out in Mark chapter 5, verse 25, and Luke chapter 13, again, people who were healed that had been in that condition for a long time. Now, again, if you were, let's say, again, he was simply lame, this man who had been that way for 38 years, after 38 years of being in that condition, if you went to a doctor, what would he tell you about the fact that you have been in that condition for 38 years? Yeah, you should have seen me about 37 years ago, right? That from a medical perspective, there's once you've kind of remained in that condition for like 38 years. We're going to talk later on in the study of the life of Christ, and eventually, I'm going to be talking about this Sunday, that when Jesus had just dealt with the rich young ruler and had told him what he needed to do, to go and sell all he had and give to the poor and come follow me, and remember, he went away grieving. He didn't do it. And what was the disciples' question? And again, Jesus followed that with, How easy is it for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven?
Not very.
Yeah, he said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Do you remember the question that the disciples asked him after he told them that?
Then
who can? And do you remember what Jesus then said in response? With man? What?
All things possible.
With man, though, he says it's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. With man, that's impossible. With God, someone had lived to be 380 years in that condition. It wouldn't have mattered. With God, then all things are possible. And again, as I listen to you talk about this, and I like the point you made about how that, again, the time in one's condition didn't matter. And frankly, you take this to a spiritual point of view, does it matter how long someone's lived apart from Christ for them to be healed? Did someone who's lived in sin for 60, 70, 80 years come to Christ to be forgiven, be healed? Yeah, Bruce?
I have a friend online, and she's been crippled for about 10 years. And right now she's going through a lot of surgery. So it's going to take probably about 3 years for her to even overcome the things that they're doing.
Yeah. And again, of course, the whole point here is that the miracles that Jesus did, it didn't take multiple visits, it didn't take follow-up appointments, and so forth. It happened immediately. So again, Jonathan introduced there was a very important question that Jesus then asked this man who'd been ill, sick, lame for these 38 years. What was the question? Do you wish to get well? Okay? And when you ask the question, do you wish to get well, grammatically speaking, Richard, what are the two possible responses to a question like that?
Yes or no?
It does not offer any other alternatives, does it? And again, when I was taught in my job, you know, working for the government, you know, we had to go do interviews of people, and we were taught interviewing skills. And if you're ever taught interviewing skills, you know the type of question you're not supposed to ask?
Yes, sir.
This type of question. You're not supposed to ask, do you or have you, because there's only, you only get one or two responses. It's yes or no. Jesus asked a yes or no question. Do you wish to get well? So again, that type of question should elicit a yes or a no. Yeah, yes, I wish to get well, or no, I don't. What type of answer did Jesus receive, though? He didn't answer the question, did he?
Yeah.
Technically speaking, he did not answer the question. But he gave an explanation, as it were. Now, this is important to note. When you and I, in conversation, say, do you wish to go on a vacation? We'd say, well, yeah, I wish I could do that. I wish I could see the world. I wish I could, I wish I could do a lot of things. When we use the word wish, how strongly do we usually use that word? It's usually kind of pretty light, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about, I wish for this and I wish for that. Okay. But when we look at this word that Jesus used in this question, the Son of God used the word, a Greek word, which is not just a preference, but it means to be resolved or to be determined. What was he asking this man? Are you hoping to get better? It's not what he's asking him. Are you resolved to get better? Are you determined to get better? That's the question that's being asked here. It's not, do you have some general dream of being better? No. Is it your resolve? Is it your conviction? Is it your determination? Is it fixed in your mind, I'm going to get better?
So he's talking about how bad he wanted this. How bad do you want to get better? Because if you're by this pool all day long and you're not down there, are you not trying to get that? Is that what kind of, obviously he knew his heart already, but
yes.
Is that what he was making him admit? Like, have you been, that's why he came with excuses of, I've been trying to get down there, but every time I do, something beats me.
Right, because he's pointing at somebody else, really, isn't he? He really didn't talk about himself. But yeah, it had to do with how badly you want it. And when we talk again, let's always bring this back to the spiritual application. Are you resolved and determined to go to heaven? Or are you just wishing? Are you just kind of hoping? And again, we use those terms rather loosely in our daily conversation in the English language. I wish something would happen. But we don't mean that I'm resolved. We don't often mean that I'm determined. Verse.
In the King James, it uses the word will. So is that actually the same word as will?
It means to exercise the human will. And if someone can read Matthew chapter 15, verse 28 for us. Matthew 15, verse 28. This is interesting. And actually, let's set the context. Begin in verse 23 through 28. Randy?
Matthew 15, 23 through 28. But he did not answer her a word, and his disciples came and implored him, saying, send her away, because she keeps shouting at us. But he answered and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, Lord, help me. And he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. But she said, yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus said to her, O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish.
You see that word there in that last verse? Be it done as you wish. It's the same word. How determined was this woman to be healed? How much was her resolve? It's very strong. And Jesus was impressed by it. Jesus was impressed by her determination, her will, her resolve. And he healed her. She had great resolve, great determination. Turn to Matthew 16, verse 24. Anybody? Grace? Again, New American Standard there uses the word wish. If anyone wishes to come after me, it's the same word. It's not, I'm hoping to follow after Jesus. I'm kind of thinking I might. It's I'm determined. I'm resolved. I'm going to do it. I'm going to exercise my will. It's going to happen. If anyone wishes to come after me, if it's your determination, then you need to take up your cross and follow me. Deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. If you're going to be that determined about it, that's what's going to be required. And then finally, Matthew 19:17, another use of this same word. Anybody, Matthew 19:17, Carolyn?
Just verse 17.
Yeah, do 16 and 17.
And someone came to him and said, "Teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life?" And he said to him, "Why are you asking me about what is good? There is only one who is good. But if you wish to enter into life, keep the commandments."
Okay. But again, there's that idea of I wish to go to heaven. And again, if we're going to use it in the same term, it means I'm not wishing, but I'm resolved, I'm determined. In the words that Chris used a moment ago, it's how badly I want it. I want it more than anything else. And I'm determined and resolved. So, again, when he says, "Do you wish to get well?" I think we need to appreciate exactly what he's asking. Is it your determination? Is it your resolve? Now, what was the man's response? Again, we kind of alluded to it. I know it was kind of discussed last week, but his response to Jesus' question.
I don't want to help
you. Okay. Yes or no, do you wish to get well? But he says, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up." Do you wish to get well? Well, you need to understand my condition. You need to understand that there are others who get well by getting into the pool. No one is helping me. No one is helping me achieve what I want and what I need. So how did he see his situation?
Farther
over. Oh, it's over, yeah. And who is he looking to for the help that he needed? People. So he's looking to man. There's no man. There's no one else who can help carry me to the pool. He's not looking at this point in time to God. And we don't know what his spiritual education or background is at this point in time. We know, again, that for 38 years he's been residing in this situation. But again, he's looking to man for his help. He's looking to man for his resolve. Now, again, it's hopeless because evidently what has been his approach for the last 38 years? Okay, well, you said he's been trying? What? Anybody know this? The classic definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Is that kind of what's going on here? I mean, he's been doing the same thing for 38 years, the same thing, and what's he getting?
Same.
He's getting the same results. There's nothing else has changed. He's doing the same thing. Again, Jesus asked a yes or no question. Again, the answers to this question are either, yes, I wish to get well, I want to get well, I resolve to get better. I want to go to heaven, I'm determined to be part of the saved. Or, no, I want to remain as I am. That's the options that we have. Yes, I want to serve the Lord. Yes, I want to be forgiven. Yes, I want to go to heaven. Or no, I just prefer to stay as I am. That was his option. That's our option today. When we talk about the Lord's invitation. The Lord's invitation is, do you wish to get well? Do you wish to be healed, forgiven of all your sins? And do you wish, we mean by that again, are you resolved? We sing that invitation song, "I am resolved. I want to exercise my will no longer to linger." Bruce?
You know, it's amazing when we first looked at it, it was a great multitude that came. So it seems as if he was in the worst condition than anyone. Everybody who was, who had some infirmities was able to get there.
Well, I don't know about everybody else. And it's interesting why Jesus picked this man to have this conversation with. And again, Jesus knows the hearts of all men. And Jesus, again, knowing his heart, I don't know whether other people, you know, were better or worse. But this is kind of like Jesus talking to Peter, remember, after his resurrection. You remember him telling Peter by what manner of death he was going to die? He told Peter, you're going to die a death like I died. And what was Peter's response? Lord, and what about this man? And we can kind of do the same thing. Lord, what about that man? What about that man? But Jesus is talking to who? He's talking to this man. Do you want to get well? Is it your resolve to get well? That question has to be answered by all of us. But again, and we're going to briefly touch on this. Was there an understanding, or did some people believe at that time, that something like this type of an ailment came upon you because of something you did? Do some people believe that?
John 9,
again, who sent this man or his parents that he should be born blind? Some people believe that. But we know, don't we? And I'm speaking to those in this room this evening, that things happen because, and it's just because we live life in the flesh. Because ailments happen. And this particular man, do we know that he did anything to deserve this? No. But even, and do we struggle sometimes when we deal with something that we feel we don't deserve? You know, I didn't do anything to, you know, I was doing everything right, but then I got this ailment or this situation. And we begin to say, why me? Sometimes, like this man, we're dealt a hand that may not be ideal. Is his situation ideal? No. It was not of his choosing, for all that we know. But what is of our choosing? When we deal with ailments and physical problems and situations in life, what is our choice? It's how we respond to it. What are we going to do? Are we simply going to, as it were, accept it and not do anything about it? And I was just, as I was thinking about this, I thought about someone we just studied. Remember that paralytic man? He also couldn't move on his own. If he was there by the pool of Bethesda, could he have gotten into the pool by himself? No. He couldn't have. But what do we know about that paralytic man?
He had friends.
And what did Jesus say of him and his friends? Your faith has made you well. Jesus, this man had faith. And they had heard about Jesus. And did that paralytic simply again sit on a corner, as it were, and say, I hope something good happens to me? I just find it interesting, the response of the paralytic was that he got his friends that we got to go find Jesus. That he's healing people, and I'm not going to wait for him to come to me. We're going to go to him, and whatever it takes, if we have to get up on the roof and dig through the panels and dig through all that mud and mortar and everything else, if that's what it takes, I'm going to the Lord. And again, when it comes to, again, our life and even bringing it to our spiritual lives, again, there are things that happen. And we need to be by like the paralytic man who says, I'm not just going to sit here and wait. I'm going to, again, seek the Lord. I'm going to try and find the truth. I'm going to find out what the will of the Lord is. I'm not going to wait for someone to come knock on my door to say, here's what the will of the Lord is. I'm going to go seek truth because I love truth. So I just, again, thought it was interesting as I thought about this, the difference between the man that we had just studied. And so again, the question we need to ask, and again, put this and think about this in a spiritual context, do we want, are we convinced of the need to get spiritually well? Or, again, what do doctors deal with all the time? People go to doctors, something's wrong. What do a lot of people go to doctors for? Do they really want to be cured? Because a lot of people go to doctors to make the symptoms go away.
Practicing physicians.
Okay. Yeah. It's something they do. But again, I think we all know that a lot of people just, they don't really want to be cured. They want the symptoms to go away. And spiritually speaking, do we want to be relieved of the difficult circumstance that we're in, or do we really want to follow the Lord and be pleasing in His sight and be in fellowship with God? Or do we simply want the effects of sin to go away? Are there consequences to sin? Do we want the consequences of sin to go away, or do we really want to be spiritually healed? And so, just dealing with consequences and symptoms or really being healed. Think about the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15. Ultimately, what was the prodigal son looking for?
Physical pleasure.
I'm sorry?
Physical pleasure.
Well, initially. But as it comes full circle.
He wants something to eat.
Okay, he wants something to eat. And then initially he's in the pigsty, longing to be fed. But then he thinks about something else. Was he just looking for food?
No.
What was he looking for?
He's looking for forgiveness.
Forgiveness and restoration with his father. Isn't that ultimately what he wanted? Yes, the hunger maybe prompted him to think about it, but his hunger prompted him to think about what? Remember the thought he had? Are there not servants of my father's household?
They
have more than enough to eat, and why am I here? And what did he say? I will do what?
I'll go to my father and say I'm not worthy.
I will get up and go to my father and say I'm not worthy. Take me in as one of your servants. Ultimately, what he wanted, what he was looking for, was restoration with his father. Even just make me a servant. Yeah, it was the temporal consequences that maybe spurred him, and sometimes we talk about needing to hit rock bottom sometimes before we start to see things clearly. But you know, I just thought it was interesting what he was looking for. He wanted to get well. He wanted to be restored. And the word, and I'm pretty sure I didn't look up this to confirm it, but in Luke chapter 15, he says, I will get up and go to my father. And I'm pretty sure that's probably the same word for volition or will that we're talking about here. It was his will. And interestingly enough, the other part of willpower is to actually exercise it, because in Luke 15 it says, I will, and then what happened? He got up and went. He actually did.
You know, I'm talking about this idea of the question that you started off, do you wish to be well? And if we bring that to our spiritual life, and we read from Matthew 19 about the young rich ruler, but a little further down, the young man said to Jesus told him all these things he had to do. And the young man said, I have kept all these things I have kept, what am I still lacking? And Jesus says, if you wish to be complete, go sell.
Yeah.
And I see what I see here, and here's the world right here. Because they say, well, yeah, I want to go to heaven, but then God lays out the plan, but they don't like that plan.
Yeah.
They don't want to do the things that God wants them to do.
No.
So how much do you really wish that you go to heaven?
Again, I think that's your point right there. Are you willing to pay the price of what it's going to take to get well, spiritually or physically? Again, I can only imagine how many people go to a doctor today and say, I want to get better. And the doctor says, well, you're going to do A, B, C, D, and E. Oh, I'm not sure I want it that much. You know, that's a pretty steep price to actually get better. And your same point, I mean, to this rich young ruler, and again, Matthew chapter 19, because, yeah, think about him. How much did he want? How strong was his will to be home? And on the other hand, also think about, and I don't know this man's heart, but there's a little bit that there could be in terms of, again, a temptation to blame others for our situation. Well, I'm not better because other people didn't do what they needed to do to help me. And we tend to, again, point the fingers at somebody else and say, well, I spiritually, I've become a lot stronger than I am now, even though, my brother didn't encourage me like I thought they should. I wanted to spiritually get strong, but everybody else isn't doing their part. And again, just citing, you know, from the beginning with Adam and Eve and Aaron and Saul, you get a lot of examples of people again pointing the finger as to, do you want to get well? Well, yes, but the people maybe formed these golden calf, and I didn't want to bring back these oxen, but the people made me do it, type of thing. Donovan?
That finger goes two ways.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does. Absolutely. Carolyn?
There was a lyric in a song years ago that said, everyone wants to get to heaven, nobody wants to die. And you have to give up something to get there, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Absolutely. Ari?
I like the comparison that you're making between the two paralytics, because it's a reminder that Jesus meets people where they are and provides the grace and mercy that they need in that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, his physical ailment was healed immediately, and that's a miracle. But Jesus gave this man a follow-up visit.
Yes, he did.
That's a challenge and strength.
And that's the exciting part of this, really.
And where does he find it? He finds it.
Yeah. It's the rest of the story, which really is where the point comes home. Yeah, we haven't got to the best part yet. Bruce?
You know, I can see how we're looking at all of this, but, you know, when a person is really having that particular illness, they have to be going through a lot of pain.
It's not a good situation, is it?
And you know, I've speaking with this young lady, every time that I speak to her, and I've mentioned, we sat down and we've gone through this story. But yet, she continues to, you know, I haven't done anything, you know, to have this pain. And why are so many other people, you know, who are in worse condition, who are in better condition, but they're still in their sin?
Yeah.
And it seems like they're doing a whole lot better.
Why? Well, read Psalm 73. Psalm 73, David asks all those same questions. Why are the wicked, you know, prospering, and why are your people, you know, going through such a difficult time? So again, to David's point, we need to count the cost in terms of, again, sometimes what it's going to take to be well, and whether we really truly want to be a disciple of his. And Jesus, as we study his life, is going to, interestingly enough, in Luke chapter 14, when he had a whole multitude before him, is going to, the outline of his sermon at that time, with a whole multitude before him, is many of you can't be my disciples. And he begins to list three different reasons why they cannot be his disciples. You know, consider David, his attitude that he would not offer to God that which cost him nothing. I was like that in 2 Samuel 24, at the end of that chapter, where he was offered, again, the plot of land to build the altar, just given to him, but David says, I'm not going to offer to God that which cost me nothing. So, again, this man has been asked the question, do you wish to get well? Is it your resolve? Are you determined to get well? He has said, I don't have anybody, again, who will carry me to the water when the water is stirred. Jesus then gives him three instructions. There's 3 points to his response. What's point number one that Jesus says in response to this man? It's one word. Arise. First thing he says to him is you need to arise. And spiritually speaking, if we're going to get well, if we're going to spiritually be healed, number one, we have to arise. Well, what does that mean? I found this extremely interesting to take a look at what these Greek words mean. This word arise means, according to Strong, through the idea of collecting one's faculties to waken, i.e. to rouse. Thayer says to arouse from sleep, to awake. First thing he says to him basically is what?
Get up.
Wake up! Wake up! Get aroused! Again, how long he'd been there? 38 years. It's time to wake up. It's time to get aroused. Don't just sit there. Romans chapter 13, if someone will read that for me. Romans chapter 13, verse 11. And as we, I like to do, let's begin actually in verse 11 through 13. Jonathan?
And do this knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife.
And verse 14.
But put on the Lord Jesus Christ, make no provision for the flesh, fulfill its lusts.
So if we're going to please God, back in verse 11, this do knowing the time that is already an hour for you to what?
To awaken.
To awaken, same word. To be aroused, to wake up, to be stirred. Jesus told this man, first thing you have to do is wake up. And spiritually speaking, for someone to be saved from their sins. There are a lot of people just in a state of spiritual lethargy, just going through the motions, just living life, just kind of going through. First thing we need to talk about, you've got to wake up. You've got to see what life is about. You've got to be aware of what's going on around you. You've got to be aware of God's creation and what He's done and His will. There's a lot of things you need to be awakened to. And again, it's just fascinating here that, again, the first thing he says is, you've got to wake up. It's not just a matter of him standing up, it's a matter of waking up. And again, we know that we joke about getting up in the morning, the alarm clock going up, going off at whatever hour of the morning it goes off at. But there's more than vertically standing up to getting up, isn't there? It's again clearing the cobwebs. It's getting awakened again mentally, of being aware of what's going on. Ephesians chapter 5, again the same word is used there. Beginning in verse 13, but all things become visible when they're exposed by the light, for everything that becomes visible is light. Verse 14, for this reason that says, awake, sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise. Again, that admonition to, again, if we're going to please the Lord, you've got to wake up. We've got to be aware of what's going on around us. So, when we think about the need to arise and to wake up, do you remember Elijah in the Old Testament? Remember when he got to the point of discouragement? And what was his attitude when he was at his low point? And so what did he do?
Hid himself in a cave.
He just went and sat down in a cave, and he says, I'm just, what did God say to him? He told him to arise. He asked him, what are you doing here? And he says, you got to get up and need to go and do the work that I sent for you to do. Again, we reference the prodigal son. It was interesting. The prodigal son himself said, I will arise. He probably wasn't sitting down while he was feeding the pigs, but I will arise in terms of, again, I've got to wake up, I've got to get out of this state of sin that he was in. I've got to rise, and I've got to go to my Father. Again, I think the point here is don't stay where you're at. When, spiritually speaking, when you're stuck in sin, don't stay where you're at. Don't stay in the same circumstance. When you realize that you're lost, do something about it. Get up, arise. Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 16. Someone want to read that for us? Proverbs 24, 16. The key to life is when you fall down to not what? They don't stay down. Proverbs 24, 16 says,
for a righteous man falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumbles in the time of calamity.
So again, is it a matter of not stumbling as we go through life? No, the fact is, We all sin to fall short of the glory of God. We all stumble. We're all going to fall down. But God, the man, is going to fall seven times.
Get up eight.
I'm sorry?
Get up eight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the old, you know, yeah. Chinese proverb, right? I think it is. It's there in the Bible. But every time you fall down, again, you don't stay there. You don't stay in that condition. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 4 is the same. So number one, he tells them to wake up. What's the next thing that he tells them?
Take up your bed.
Take up your bed or your pallet. Again, another interesting word. Again, I was kind of, take up your pallet. The word for take up in the Greek means to sail away, to weigh anchor. To take up, in nautical terms, means you're ready to sail out of the harbor. It's what you need to do before you're going to sail away. You've got to take off that which is holding you back. That anchor that's holding you there into the port, you've got to pick that up. You've got to take that so again you can begin your journey. That's what Strong says. Zadie says it means to take up as a yoke. And again, the idea of Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, which says, if I quote that, learn from me, if I meet you humble in heart. And what does it mean to take up the yoke? Right?
Too bad to make it.
Yeah. You may not have done it, but you understand it, though, don't you?
It's the oxen wears.
Yeah, again, it's put around the neck of the oxen. You have to pick that up. But again, Jesus said, is that yoke put on you? Jesus says, take it up and put it on yourself. So you've got to take up your yoke and get ready to go to work. So again, that's the idea, but I find that interesting, or to bear or carry is a burden. And again, in Matthew chapter 27, verse 32, the idea there is the, who is it that bore the cross for Jesus? Okay. So, number one, he says you need to wake up. Number two, he says, you need to take up those things, those anchors, those weights, so that you can begin to, again, sail away, to use the words of Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2, to begin to run the race. It's, in other words, take up your pallet. And in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, he doesn't say take up your pallet, but he says to get rid of the sin and everything that hinders you and run with endurance the race that is set before us. So again, wake up, take up the yoke, as it were, and begin to run the race. And then finally, he says, number three, well, first of all, again, the interesting thing is that, go ahead, Donna.
I didn't need to interrupt your lesson, but 9 and 2, Jesus said, take up your
take up your pallet. Again, where had he spent the last 38 years?
On his steps.
On his pallet. Where was his home? It was right there. Where should he not have gone back to ever again? That place. Take it with you. Take up your pallet. You're not going back. Again, I think there's some spiritual application of the fact that, again, those things that we need to leave behind as we run the race of the child of God, again, we can't go back to that. We need to count the cost of the times we've talked about and make the sacrifices. And then finally, the third thing that he says is
walk.
Okay, and to walk. What does it mean to walk? Well, it's a very broad word, and simply literally and figuratively means to tread all around, to figuratively, to live, to deport oneself, to follow. to regulate one's life, to conduct oneself. Now, the word is used to do what I'm doing right now. It means to physically walk. But how often in the New Testament is it used to in a figurative way?
A lot.
To walk in the light as he is in the light. Paul used the term a lot in his epistles to the Ephesians and to the Colossians. He told the Ephesians that you, in terms of their former manner of life, that they could walk no longer. You know, and he didn't mean that you aren't physically, it means you can't live the same way anymore. And so when Jesus told him, rise, wake up, take up your pallet again, take that yoke upon you, and then walk. Yes, he meant that physically. But I think there's some spiritual lessons here as well, that you need to not only walk in terms of physical walk, but what did he ask everybody else who had ever followed him to do? Well, I just gave his word. To follow him. Follow me. Again, it signifies a whole realm of the individual life. He was to have a changed walk. Again, could he live his life the way he had lived it the last 38 years? No. And interestingly, you know, the question we have to ask is, where will our walk take us? You know, Romans chapter 6, verses 3 and 4 says, what about our walk? That we're to come out of the waters of baptism to walk in newness of life. There should be a new walk. We're to live our lives in a different way. And again, the passages in Ephesians and Colossians, again, talking about, again, the way we live our lives. If somebody could read, especially Colossians chapter 1, verse 10 real quick.
That's too quick.
Yeah.
As you may walk worthy of the Lord, pleasing in him, being fruitful in every good word, increasing in knowledge of God.
Okay, to walk worthy of the Lord in... fully pleasing him. So again, I think this is interesting. Some think what he told him to rise, that is awaken, take up your pallet, that is again, it's time to set sail here, and you need to pick up your anchor, take that yoke upon you, and it's time to take to walk and again to begin to live for me. And so the interesting thing is that what immediately happened. The response was immediately the man became well, and he took up his pallet, and he began to walk. We'll talk about it again where Ori was taking us, where he went to. And it's interesting, where did he immediately walk? As Ori already pointed out, he walked to the temple. In Luke chapter 17, in verses 5 through 10, you read about 10 lepers who were cleansed, but 9 of them walked where? Wherever they wanted to. Where did just one of them walk?
Back to the
Lord to praise him and to honor him and to thank him. So we'll continue in the study of John chapter 5 talking about, again, the response. And then we're going to talk about the reaction of the Jews to what this man did and then to what Jesus did.